Welcome to the May edition of the Greenpeace podcast. I'm your host, Joss Cope. This month's edition focuses on coal and climate. Coming up, we've got an exclusive interview with award-winning filmmaker Nick Broomfield, talking about his latest project, a 20-minute documentary about our very own King's North Six. They're the guys who stood trial for shutting down a coal-fired power station and made history when they were acquitted, you may remember. But first, veteran comedian and star of the fabled 1970s TV series The Good Life, Richard Briers, turned up at our air plot on the site of the proposed new runway at Heathrow to help us dig for victory in the campaign by starting an allotment. Christian Hunt grabbed a spade and went along to meet him.
When I started working at Greenpeace a few months ago, I was envisaging ending up in some interesting situations. But I honestly have to say that meeting all-round legend Richard Briers of The Good Life fame wasn't one of them. But because he's helping us out with the new allotment we've built on the airplot, early last week I went down to Sipson to meet Richard and find out why he's supporting us and the airplot project.
Well, I'm here in the village of Sipson, which is in the pathway of the proposed third runway from Heathrow, which nobody wants. It means the destruction of this village and several others in the surrounding area. The whole place will be concreted in, and it will be disaster for the environment. I think the whole thing is dreadful, I think, the prospect of it. I don't think the government, even this loony government, will do it, but we have to keep fighting. One of the very clever ideas that's happening now here is the creation of an allotment, and all these people are slaving away, building an allotment with fruit and vegetables, which is right in the path of the oncoming planes if this dreadful thing happened. And so it's a kind of blockade, really, to stop these wretched aircraft coming over. See, people say, well, we want more runways. We have six runways already in the London area. So if this awful development took place, it would mean that it would be 225,000 extra flights over the London area in a year. The other thing they said was that they would cut down the CO2 gas by 80%. At the same time, they're going to do this ridiculous development, which will make it, God knows how much gas will be released from all these aeroplanes. I mean, appalling. And so bang goes the climate change will be disastrous and everything. It's a real typical 21st century balls up, quite frankly. That's all I can really say. The government say it'll be good for business, all this wretched expansion, when we should not be expanding at all. And very, very powerful people like Mr. Sainsbury and the Carphone Company, people like that who run these enormous conglomerates, zillionaire people and zillionaire firms, say they won't make any difference at all. It will not improve any kind of expansion of income. So even the big boys say it's rubbish, which of course it is.
We've now given the keys to the airplot allotment shed to the local Sipson villagers, who are going to grow fruit and vegetables on the land. So look out for more news on the airplot at the website, airplot.org.uk.
And we're still inviting people to become beneficial owners of the airplot and draw a line in the sand against aviation expansion. So please do so if you haven't already. There are over 40,000 airplotters so far, so join the crowd. 6 months or so ago, we had one of our most important victories in our campaign to stop a new generation of polluting coal-fired power stations being built in Britain. Six volunteers who helped to shut down the current plant at King's North in Kent were found not guilty of criminal damage after a jury accepted their defence that they had a lawful excuse because they were acting to prevent damage to property around the world, which is in immediate need of protection from the impacts of climate change, caused in part by burning coal. The case caught the attention of influential director Nick Broomfield, whose reflexive filmmaking style has been a major influence on the work of people like Michael Moore, Louis Theroux and Morgan Spurlock. Nick has now just finished work on A Time Comes, a documentary about the King's North action and the people who took part in it. It's a subject he feels so strongly about that he's waiving any profits from it. Brendan Montague caught up with him by phone recently and began by asking him why.
First of all, why did you agree to make this film for no fee?
I agreed to do it because I felt that it was something that really that needed to be done. You know, I believe and support Greenpeace. I mean, and I think that we are at a point where we've been listening to people talking about climate change and its effects for so long, and it does seem we're at that point where something really needs to happen.
Yeah.
Like, for example, what they did with King's North. There needs to be direct action. And obviously, you know, offering your services for a film is not exactly direct action, but it's doing something.
Did you use the opportunity to try something new? Does this film differ from previous work in any sense?
Well, yeah, I used this sort of very big, very high resolution HD camera. What I wanted more than anything was that the audience to feel that the people who are working with Greenpeace are just normal people. They weren't sort of professionals. They all were people who came to Greenpeace in a lot of different ways, who came to it for commitment from a variety of different backgrounds. And that there was a sort of a modesty and a humanity about them. And I wanted that to come across in the way in which they talked. I wanted them to talk in a very relaxed and informal way and to get them to be as close as possible to the audience. And so we used this camera, you know, where they would be talking kind of almost in a very kind of anecdotal and, I guess, immediate way to the audience, which is, I think, what worked. And the technology that we used was very good at achieving that.
Is that something you'll bring forward to future projects?
It's possible, yeah. I mean, I think it was very good for that, for this particular approach. And then, you know, the Greenpeace obviously had some great footage of their own, which worked very well with that. So the interviews were very much about learning what the people had been through and using the interviews to tell us the story of what had happened when they scaled the chimney and what was going through their minds and what, you know, to make it as personal as possible, really, and to make it as informal as possible.
Yeah. Do you think Greenpeace can have a real impact on public opinion? And do you think this film will contribute to that in any way?
Well, I think it could do. I mean, you know, I haven't really seen the film yet with the public audience, but I do find every time I look at it, I'm rather amazed at myself that I'm very moved by the people in it and their stories and their bravery. I think it's their bravery that's so moving, and the fact that they are just normal people. These aren't people who sort of go down to the gym and work out, you know, 8 hours a day. These, yeah, you know, and eat super protein. These are just normal people who have taken this upon themselves. And it was an example of what normal people can do if they want to do something. And that's very, very moving. So I think other people will be moved by the film, and I hope it will move them, you know, just to be more involved, I think, and to ask more questions about what they can be doing. It certainly has with me.
Do you think with some people, though, the enormity of climate change renders them feeling rather impotent, that they can't scale chimneys?
Well, I suppose the first question to ask, you know, is, are there ways in which I can lead my life in a sort of eco-friendly way? And then are there ways in which I could help with Greenpeace? Are there ways I could help to get the debate going, you know, whether it's in the school with what children are being taught or are learning, or, you know, could I, obviously you can make donations and that sort of thing. But I think the more people are involved and the more pressure, in a way, is brought to bear on the government, the more likelihood is that there will be greater investments to finding alternative technologies. And I mean, government policy is very sensitive. I'm sure Greenpeace had an influence already in what they did at King's North with government policy.
Absolutely, yeah.
And this is really what it's all about, and it's, you know, a great achievement.
And was there any concern that working with an NGO would lead to allegations that you'd compromised your objectivity? Do you get accused of not being objective?
Well, I always am, because I think my film's very subjective anyway. And, you know, I've never pretended to be making objective films. I've always sort of indicated pretty clearly what my own feelings are. And I hope my enthusiasm for the Greenpeace activists comes across. I certainly felt convinced by them when I undertook to do the film. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it.
Absolutely.
If I hadn't believed in it, I certainly wouldn't have done it.
What do you like most about the finished film?
I like some of the anecdotes. I like the humour. I like the simplicity and sort of, you know, as I said, I like the simplicity of the film. And I like all that sort of thing. And I like a lot the blend of that with the raw footage that the Greenpeace people shot of, you know, struggling up this chimney into the sort of world of Dante's Inferno. It's just a very human story of great courage, I think. Great courage and great love and great belief, which is, I suppose, what all great stories are about.
Thanks for the kind words, Nick. Well, I hope that's whetted your appetite for what, I can say because I've had a sneak preview, is a compelling film. A Time Comes is produced by Bright Green Pictures, and you'll be able to see it online from the 31st of May, when it launches on the Guardian website, coinciding with an in-depth interview with Nick and the defendants in the Observer newspaper. Shortly afterwards, it'll also be available in high definition via the Greenpeace website. Well, that's all for this month. For more on the topics and people mentioned in this edition, go to www.greenpeace.org.uk/podcasts. And please send any bouquets or brickbats to me at webteam@uk.greenpeace.org. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next month.